Well, this year, we suggested to you at the beginning of the year that we were adapting a theme called Living in the Fullness of God, and we've tried to refer back to that and to have the things that we talk about on a Sunday morning sort of tie back to that idea of, as we do these things, as we check in with God, as we walk closer with God. Not that any of us are perfect. We all make mistakes and mess up. But as we journey closer to God, or in our walk with God, that we will know more and more what it is to live in the fullness of God. The Bible talks about that. Those are some verses in Ephesians that talk about being filled with all the fullness of God. And so as we continue to keep our theme this year of living in the fullness of God in mind over the summer, I'd like to take the opportunity to consider together with you what we know as the Ten Commandments. Now, I hope that doesn't strike a note of, oh, really? It's going to be fun and it's going to be exciting. The question for us this summer, and that I wanted to ask, is something like, or are the Ten Commandments that I want to look at with you this summer, are they simply relics of the past that we really don't need to pay attention to at all? Or are they actually relevant to us today? Do they have any relevance to us today? If they don't, if they're just relics of the past, then let's leave them there. And that was great. It was history. It was all part of that. We don't need to pay attention to them. If they are relevant to us today, then we should not only, I would suggest to you, know them, but we should also somehow be able to apply them to our lives, to our daily living. Not that we wake up each morning and go, okay, I'm doing this one and this one, but that overall we can somehow in our lives be able to apply them to us. And so God, just be with us as we take a look at this and help us to know those things and how they might apply to us. But what I want to do is start by taking a look at them, just so we know what we're talking about. You know, Steve and I were talking the other day, and we're like, can you do the Ten Commandments off by heart? And I'm like, I'm not sure if I get them all quite right or in the right order. I know, you know, there's some stuff, but we weren't sure we'd be able to. So I thought, several surveys have been done that talk about this too, and most of us couldn't really remember them all, and so we want to read them together, not off that particular slide, but off the next one. It's found in Exodus 20, verses 3 to 17. It says, then God gave the people all these instructions, and here's what he said. He said, you must not have any other god but me. He said, you must not make for yourself an idol of any kind, or an image of anything in the heavens, or on the earth, or in the sea. You must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for any other gods. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Interesting, the Lord will not let you go unpunished if you misuse his name. Next one is remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest, dedicated to the Lord your God. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Honor your father and mother. Then you will live a long, full life in the land of the Lord, in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not testify falsely against your neighbor. You must not covet, or, you know, have that desire that I want that. You must not covet your neighbor's house. You must not covet your neighbor's wife or husband, male or female servant, ox or donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. That's where I'm going to end the reading there this morning for that passage. Sound familiar? Any of that? Sound familiar? You probably recognize some of these as laws of the land. Laws which, if you break, you will face the consequences in a court of law. I mean, if you ever want to read the amazing account of how these commandments came to be, how they were given to people, read it in the book of Exodus. It's a crazy account. It's amazing. Although we read of the Ten Commandments being written into stone tablets and placed in what was called the Ark of the Covenant. At that time, it was like a special box or a special chest designated by God, and special things were put in there. And although the Ten Commandments, those two stone tablets, were put in that chest and remained there for hundreds of years, those stone tablets have disappeared. But the Ten Commandments live on. In fact, they form the basis for codes of law all over the world. For you technological people, some have said that Moses was very technologically advanced in that he was the first person to have received instructions on a tablet that was connected to the cloud. Thank you. That's all I got. These 10 laws are short and simple enough for anyone to understand. 297 words, we understand originally. But someone wrote that some folks needed them to be even simpler. So here's how they summarize them. Just one God. Don't worship anything but God. Don't use God's name carelessly. Take a day a week to rest and thank God. Honor your parents. No killing people. No sex with somebody else's spouse. No stealing. No telling lies. Don't wish you had other people's stuff. These laws that sound so simple, these guidelines that God has given us, sound so simple, have had so much influence in our world. I know this is going back a stretch, a long ways, but a fellow by the name of John Adams, you may have heard of him. He was the second president of the United States. He said this about the Ten Commandments. He said, "These laws, most of which have been enacted by every nation which ever professed any code of law, are essential to the existence of society. Useless would be the search among the writings of secular history to find so broad, so complete, and so solid a basis of morality as the Ten Commandments lay down." Another guy by the name of Rabbi Zacharias said, "The reason we have 17,000 pages in our law books is because we cannot follow 10 lines on a tablet of stone." God gave the Ten Commandments, we read, to Moses as a foundation not only of law for the nation of Israel, but of how they and how we relate to God, of how they, how we relate to each other, and how they, how we function as a society. Interestingly, when Jesus began his ministry over 1,000 years later, he not only taught about the Ten Commandments, he helped people understand them in even simpler terms. There was a situation we read of in the New Testament where one time a teacher of religious law came up and he was like trying to trick Jesus or trap him into saying something. So he said, "Of all the commandments," he said, "which is the most important?" And we read that Jesus replied, "The most important commandment is this. Listen. The Lord our God is the one and only Lord, and you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. The second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. No other commandment is greater than these." Interesting. And here's what Jesus did. He took the Ten Commandments and he condensed them down to two even simpler elements. Love God, love others. I mean, you sort of think of it in these terms. Think about how when a child comes to understand some important things, a child starts out hearing things like, "Don't touch the stove, don't touch that iron, don't touch that heater, don't touch the candle, don't go near the fireplace." You know, if you have a kid that likes cars and hangs out with them, I guess you'd say, "Don't touch the exhaust pipe." Eventually, that child catches on to the main idea. They get it. Don't touch hot stuff. Don't touch hot stuff. They get that main idea. And you see, the first four commandments have to do with our relationship with God. As Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The other six commandments have to do with our relationship with each other. As Jesus said, to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. I don't know if you've heard the stories or read stories about the Ten Commandments being banned or other controversies about them in news articles, but one story said that Chinese officials just recently entered a church and ordered the removal of one of the Ten Commandments, the first one. And the article wrote, this is another example of the nation's crackdown on Christianity. Unlike previous cases of persecution, this one took place in a government-approved, it's called Three Self Church, in a government-approved church and not an illegal, unregistered congregation. About 30 government officials from the patrol inspection team took part in the examination of the church. And according to an organization that monitors persecution in other countries, an official inspected the church thoroughly, stopped in front of the pulpit, and pointed to one of the Ten Commandments on the wall and said, this must be removed. And he was referring to the first commandment, you shall have no other gods besides me. In another case, the U.S. Supreme Court recently sided with a lower court that ordered a New Mexico city to remove a Ten Commandments monument from the lawn outside City Hall. In yet another instance, the Oklahoma Supreme Court declared that it is unconstitutional to display a statue of the Ten Commandments approved by the state legislature on the grounds of the state capitol building in Oklahoma City. In a 7-2 ruling, the court said that the state constitution specifically banned any uses indirectly benefiting religion, adding that the Ten Commandments are obviously religious in nature and are an integral part of the Jewish and Christian faiths. I wonder if they acknowledge how many of the Ten Commandments they actually use in their very own courts. You see, it's not the last six commandments that offend people, it's the first four. The problem seems to be that the first commandments call us to honor God above all else. And some folks just don't like that idea. But the truth is, honor for God is a necessary foundation for any code of law or behavior. If there's no God, then what's the basis of morality? I mean, who defines what's right and what's wrong? You see, what happens is that when laws are based on whoever happens to be in power at any given time, then morality gets twisted. And we end up with absurd and contradictory laws where turtle eggs and bird eggs and fish eggs are protected by law, but an unborn baby is left completely defenseless, unprotected. The first four commandments are essential to living a moral life. They show us how to live out the greatest commandment, love the Lord our God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Again, that doesn't mean we have to become go live in a monastery or somehow seclude ourselves from the rest of the world so we can do this. No, we do this in the context of our daily lives. We do this in the context of the stuff we don't like. We do this in the context of the difficult stuff. We work towards, we strive towards honoring God. Loving is a strong word, but loving the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind and strength. See, the teachings of Jesus never contradicted the Ten Commandments. In fact, he reinforced them. We read in Matthew 5, 17 and 18, Jesus said, don't misunderstand why I've come. I didn't come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. I came to accomplish their purpose. He said, I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. In Romans, we read another verse. It says, the law of the Spirit of life has set you free in Christ Jesus from the law of sin and death. What does all of that mean? Well, it means that Jesus brought the Spirit of life to set us free from the law of sin and death, which was back here. Now, here's what kind of happened. God gave people his Ten Commandments because he's God. And he has a certain standard to live up to. He's God. You know what the problem was and is? That no one can live up to that standard. No one can live up to that requirement that God gave, except for Jesus. No one's ever successfully lived by the Ten Commandments. Those commandments actually showed humankind's need for a Savior, for God's help. Because God knew it when he gave those. He knew that nobody would be able to live up to, but he gave them to give direction, to give order, to give health to society, at the same time knowing we would never be able to perfectly follow those. That's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus came and gave his life as a sacrifice to cover all of our sin. God gave the Ten Commandments to show us that we need his grace and mercy. And God gave us all the grace and mercy we need through Jesus. It's all right there in his word. So while it's great to summarize something like the Ten Commandments, it's also important to know them, to know what it is that God's called us to strive toward, to work toward through the help of his Spirit. It's a code for life that will help us to experience living in the fullness of God. It's a code for living that will enable us to live lives that are good ones, that are godly ones, ones that others look at and say, okay, what's that all about? And so as we consider these commandments this summer, don't get caught up on the letter of the law, but let's try to understand the intent, and maybe we'll not only learn a few things along the way to help us live lives that are pleasing to God, but perhaps it may even cause us to live differently in relation with each other and those in the world around us. We got a few minutes left together this morning, and I just wanted to take those few minutes, not going to go long, and just ask a question then about the Ten Commandments. What is going on with that first and second one? What's going on with that first and second man? I just want to take a minute to look at what's the difference between those two. In the first of the Ten Commandments, God says, you must not have, you know, any other God but me. We're not to have or to serve or to worship any God other than the true God. And in the second commandment, we learn that we're not to make idols of any kind or bow down to worship them. And so commandment one is no other gods. Commandment two is don't worship idols. Isn't that kind of the same thing? The different words? It seems on the surface as though maybe God sort of is repeating himself a little bit here. But as we read about that, as you study a bit about that, scholars and other people who study these things very carefully tell us that God didn't have a little lapse when he was giving the Ten Commandments. He didn't forget what he had just said, because the intent of these two commandments is different. They are different. The first commandment, we understand, has to do with who we worship. The second one has to do with how we worship. There's again, one of those stories in the Old Testament. It's crazy. It's an illustration of the difference between the first and second commandments, and it's in the account of Israel. Have you ever heard of the golden calf? Hear that golden calf incident story that happened? In fact, it actually takes place, that whole golden calf thing actually takes place while God's giving Moses the Ten Commandments. But it happens in Exodus 32. Here's what kind of happens. Moses had been on the mountain, okay, talking with God for 40 days and 40 nights, we're told. And the people who were waiting down in the valley for him to come back, they start going like, what happened to this guy? Like, where is he? Maybe he's not coming back. And so they ask Aaron, sort of the second in charge, they ask him, they say, can you make us a god or gods to go before us on the journey? And Aaron does, and he makes them this golden calf thing. And then the Israelites say that the calf was the god who brought them out of Egypt. Now, the Israelites may have been rebellious, but they weren't so dumb as to think that the recently made calf was the one to bring them out of Egypt from slavery. I mean, God had brought them out of Egypt over 3 months earlier. And Israel knew that the calf didn't even exist at the time they left Egypt. So what's going on? And the calf couldn't have brought them out of Egypt, and they knew it. You see, for them, this calf was a representation of the true God who had led them out of Egypt. And we see in the verses a little bit later, it says, when Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord. So the next day the people rose early, you know, and they did offerings and all that kind of stuff. And then they got up and did some other stuff. The people had a festival to the Lord. Their festival was done to the Lord. You see, whenever you see the word Lord in the Bible, in capitals, that is referring to the true God of the Bible. That means that it's translated from the Hebrew word Yahweh or Jehovah. Yahweh is God's personal name. It's only used to refer to God in the Bible. So Israel was worshiping God, the one who brought them out of Egypt. They were worshiping the right God, but they were worshiping him in the wrong way. They were worshiping him through the use of an idol. And they weren't supposed to represent God in the form of anything in all creation. But remember, they'd been living in Egypt. And Egyptians worshipped many gods. And nearly all of the Egyptian gods were represented in the form of animals. And when it came to the Egyptians and their idols, any animal was fair game. But God would not be represented in the image of any of his creatures, any part of his creation. And so they were worshiping the God who delivered them, but they were doing that through the use of something else, of an idol. And so maybe commandment one was in their minds, but commandment two they messed up on. Clearly, there's also in the second commandment the idea that there shouldn't be worship of any kind of idol, whether it represents the true God or some made-up God. We don't need, or should we need, any kind of imagery, any kind of statues. We don't need to use certain phrases or words or anything else in order to worship God. It doesn't mean, and some folks believe that we need a certain statues or certain pictures or certain things in order to be able to communicate or to worship God. And he says, no, just talk to me, talk to me. Doesn't mean that certain pictures of art or things don't give us reminders of God and of what Jesus did for us, but we don't give our worship to or through them. Like, part of what happened I'm just going to take a little sip here while you watch. Part of what happened when Jesus died on the cross is that we were given access to God. Sometimes he just directly. Part of what happened when Jesus died on the cross was that we were given access to God. We can talk and relate directly to him. You don't need me. You don't need anyone else in order to do that. We have an empty cross at the front of this church, which reminds us of what Jesus did for us as his followers. We don't worship it. We don't pray to the cross. We don't have to look at it or be in front of it to worship or pray to God. That piece of wood or whatever it's made of does not hold special power. We worship God. We have relationship with God because we have his Spirit in. Nothing else is needed. Jesus said in John chapter 4, he said, but the time is coming, indeed it's here now, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit, and for God is spirit. So those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. And so we see the first commandment talks about who we worship, The second one gives some direction of how we do that, or how we don't do that. And there was, it was a pretty big deal back then when he was addressing that to what was going on in their context. But it also has, that's a question for us, for me. Is there anything that I put before God? Is there, or give my allegiance to as a priority instead of God? It doesn't necessarily mean that I shouldn't have that something, or even do that something. It means I need to get my priorities straight. But if there is something that's taking priority in our lives over God, maybe we do need to reassess whether it should be part of our life. And then maybe just check with ourselves whether we do worship God for who He is, as God, not using of any sort in your life or not. Well, these two commandments we looked at today set the stage for everything else. Are they relevant for our lives today? First, and worship Him alone, you will know what it means to live in the fullness of God more and more. Folks, we live in a world, in a society that has turned its back on God, and it's breaking. It's breaking more and more every day, it seems. And so let's be people who live in wholeness, who strive to live in wholeness, not in brokenness, and show the world that putting God first and worshiping Him is the way to go. Let's pray. Father, I thank You for Your word. Sometimes, a lot of times, it's really challenging just to sort of grasp it and to try and understand it and figure out what it is You're trying to tell us. So God, this morning, I think Your word is saying, hey, no other gods before Me. I'm first, I'm only, no other gods. And so, Lord, I pray You'd help us not to put things before You. Lord, help us to understand what that means. Maybe there's something in our lives that we give our allegiance to, that we make a priority way more than You. Lord, as those who claim to be Christ followers, that ought not to be. For those of us who have come to You and admitted our sin and confessed that and asked for Your forgiveness and invited You to come and to be in our lives, that ought not to be. Lord, then in the way we worship, I pray that the way we do that would be honoring to You. Would You just open our eyes to show us if there's something, some way that may be offensive to You in the way we worship You? Maybe it's just our carelessness sometimes. I don't know. You are almighty and amazing God. And I don't even fully grasp what that means. But I know it's true. I believe it's true. And I pray that You would help us to worship You, even as Your word says, in spirit and truth. Because that's what You call us to do. So thank You. I ask these things in Your name. Amen.